Play and stay on Washington State's Kitsap Peninsula, the natural side of the Puget Sound. Stand up paddleboarding, hiking, great restaurants and breweries. I'll tell you more about your next vacation destination later in the show.
Cairo, Seattle.
And this is Your Last Meal, a show about famous people and the stories behind the foods they love most. Today on the program, a live show! A couple of weeks ago, I got to do Your Last Meal live in front of a studio audience at Thing Art and Music Festival in a cool old theater at Fort Worden in one of my favorite cute little harbor towns in Washington State, Port Townsend. Thing had an awesome lineup of performers. Jose Gonzalez, Modest Mouse, Father John Misty, Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, and me, and my awesome guests. Blues rock musician Ian Moore, and John Heater, who is best known for playing Napoleon Dynamite in the film Napoleon Dynamite. We talk Tex-Mex, Japanese curry eating competitions, and of course, their last meals. All right, so let's tap into the Your Last Meal live show at ThingFest in Port Townsend, Washington. My first guest on stage at Wheeler Theater is Ian Moore. He has been touring out of Austin, Texas for 30 years, put out 11 full-length albums, and toured with the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, and ZZ Top. But when he's not touring, he lives a quiet life on Vashon Island in Washington State, which is a quick ferry ride away from Seattle, but a totally different vibe. It's a beautiful, forested, rural little island with a DIY hippie vibe. And Ian is into it. He's a beekeeper. He jars his own honey, and he loves the Asian markets in the Pacific Northwest. But like so many of us expats, he misses the food of his homeland. The food in Texas. When did you move to Vashon from Texas?
A long time ago. I moved here in 1998, so personally, I was in my 20s.
One thing that I want to talk about that is close to my heart. So I moved here from California 17 years ago, and the first week I moved here, I went and got a burrito like I would do all the time in Northern California.
I know where you're going.
It was actually the worst burrito
I've ever had. No, I love Seattle, but
It's the worst. And this actually was the worst burrito. I haven't had one this bad before since it had a medley of frozen corn, peas, and carrots.
Oh.
And it tasted like cinnamon, and it was from what looked like a little taqueria, and it was kind of just like a big F you. You're not in California anymore.
Yeah.
So coming from Texas, I know you're a big fan of Tex-Mex, and you wrote, Tex-Mex is a very misunderstood subgenre.
I was going to get to,
What do you mean by that?
Well, because Tex-Mex now means often to a lot of people this kind of corny white people making Mexican food, and I get that I'm a white person.
Literally corny, or?
That was actually a pun without intention. Where I'm from in Central Texas, I'm from Austin. People that came to Texas, they changed, the cuisine changed, so instead of corn tortillas, like, for instance, all my friends that when you get Mexican food, everybody gets corn tortillas because that's more authentic. But honestly, like, if you're having Texas Mexican food, you have flour tortillas, for just as an example, and beef instead of pork is what just the meat, and so fajitas came from that. And then, of course, the queso, like, which was like what we now call queso fundido, turned into chili con queso. And one of the most horrific moments of my parenting life was when my kids referred to it as cheese dip. And I thought about beating them. I would never do that to my children, but I did have a fleeting thought of like, What have I done?
You just have to dunk them in really hot cheese to
cheese dip
them.
Right?
Yeah.
Chili con queso. Yeah. So actually, this trip here at Thing Festival, like for real, I spent all day yesterday preparing my salsa, my refried beans, my potatoes. We've got eggs, and I'll make migas tomorrow morning for whoever's around.
You can't find good Tex-Mex in Washington, just like I can't find a good burrito.
Well, I do have to say that I have these dear friends, because, of course, Texans are, we're kind of like Australians or Germans. We find each other wherever we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a good friend of mine, Jack Timmons, that went my friend Aaron Franklin's barbecue camp, opened Jack's Barbecue. And then another friend of mine, Graham, has now spun off and done Jackalope. And that is a Tex-Mex thing. that I'm going to go to next time I'm in town.
So you haven't been yet?
So I haven't been yet. Okay. So I don't want to say I've heard really good things about it. The way that I like to make it, I cannot get it up here, at least to this point.
I read that you're going to start selling salsa at your shows.
Well, I did.
You did? You already
did.
Okay.
I don't know anything about food service. Like, I live here and I fly to Austin whenever I start a tour. That's kind of insane now that I've done it for 20-something years. I get to town, I immediately go to the HEB, which is the grocery store, and I bought every jalapeno they had in the store. And, you know, if you've never done this before, it's like, how do you scale? You know, I had my little recipe for what I make.
Yeah,
so how do you scale it where you do 80 pounds? And so I was in the HEB with my little iPhone calculator going, okay, 80 pounds and this much garlic, jalapenos. How many?
Okay.
And then how many cloves are in like a bowl or how many, whatever.
This is a word problem.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so anyhow, I made as much as I could possibly make, which seemed like a lot. And then I had 57 jars. I thought it was going to have like 570. I had no idea. So I had them at the shows and I told everybody on social media, if you come to my shows in Texas, I'm selling salsa. And then I sold out the first night.
I'm sure you did.
So then I was alive.
Jars. That's awesome.
But it was rad. And I am going to, and so I had a record three records ago called El Sonido Nuevo, The New Sound. It's kind of a play on the Mighty Boosh skit. And so my salsa, just because I was cheap and I wanted to use the same logo, was La Salsa Nueva with the same picture.
Oh, I love that. The new salsa.
And the new salsa.
Yes.
Yeah.
What makes your salsa special?
Well,
or what's in there?
To be fair, all I'm doing is just taking a salsa. So salsa has an evolution. And what happens is that it will typically starts not in California.
When you said evolution, I just instantly pictured, like, you know, the evolution with the monkeys and it becomes a person, and yours is like a little like Tostitos salsa, and then it becomes Salsa Nueva.
I like you're good at
this. I'll make your next label.
Actually, you could. But no, it like, so salsas will come and there will be like a style, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it will percolate and you'll see it around in the taquerias, and then all of a sudden it's in like grocery stores all over the country. This one is not, I mean, I put my own twist on it. I have some different stuff I put in it, but it's the new salsa. It really is. It's like,
you're not answering the question, Ian.
What was the question?
What's in your damn salsa?
Oh, you want me to actually physically tell you what's
really
in it?
Yeah.
Lots of soul,
okay.
Some love, and a little bit of pain.
Oh, Grandma, that's so sweet.
No, it's mostly chilies. The point is not to make it as spicy. Chilies, especially if you use like a serrano, has a lot of top end.
Yeah.
Like it's a bite. It's got that, maybe it's ascorbic acid. The salsa that I base mine off is called Salsa Doña. And salsa doing this grandmother salsa.
Oh, okay.
And
so
it's,
I called
kind of
you grandma instinctively.
Yeah, you really did. You nailed it. And so it's kind of a nice, it tastes so good on like eggs, breakfasty things. I made mine to have more like, you know, a little bit of lime, a little bit of cilantro. Sometimes I'll put in like a tomatillo, but not cooked, raw.
Yeah.
So it gives it a little bit of that kind of
acidity.
Yeah, acid, but not acid like a tomato. It's a different. So yeah, it's got a great bite. It's not meant to be super spicy. And that's the point. Like sometimes with hot sauce, it's like, how hot is it?
I know.
And that's not the deal.
Burn your face off. You want to have the flavor.
I want the flavor.
This episode is different than our usual episodes. Usually I bring on other guests to talk about the science, the history, or the culture of the foods that we talk about in the episode. But since it's a special live show, I decided to play the interviews in their entirety. But I couldn't resist popping in to talk about Salsa Doña, because it's a style of salsa that I had never heard of before. Salsa is ancient. It can be traced back to the Aztecs, Incas, and Mayans, who crushed tomatoes, chilies, and squash seeds to make chunky sauces. This was long before the Spaniards conquered Mexico in the 1500s. So I was surprised to see that Salsa Doña seems to be a fairly new invention, at least under that name. It was created just over 20 years ago by a Mexican immigrant named Bertha Gonzalez. And Bertha lives in Austin, Texas. Bertha was living in Austin and working at a fairly new taqueria called Taco Deli when the owners had a salsa competition for the employees. So she brought her salsa in a repurposed sour cream container, and this was a salsa that she had been making since she ran a taco truck in Veracruz, Mexico. And it was nothing like the Taco Deli owners had ever tried before. This salsa is lime green, it is very spicy, and it's creamy, despite there being no dairy in it. The recipe is simple. Roasted jalapenos, garlic, oil, lime juice, and salt. But the key is to blend it up until it's super creamy. Bertha's salsa won the staff competition and eventually made its way onto the Taco Deli menu, where it remains to this day. And these days, you can buy Taco Deli Salsa Doña at some Whole Food markets. Salsa Danya has been copycatted by many restaurants in Austin. It is considered an Austin staple. And if you Google it online, all of the recipes trace back to Taco Deli. Now, earlier I said that this salsa was invented 22 years ago, and I doubt that that's true. It is such a simple combination of common ingredients. It feels like a huge stretch to say that a blended jalapeno salsa was recently invented. But Bertha introduced her recipe to Austin and definitely popularized it in the United States. Plus, she gave it a name. The word Doña literally translates to madam or ma'am. And colloquially, it's a word that's used to show an older woman respect. So you'd attach it to a woman's first name. For example, Doña Bertha. When we come back, I ask Ian about his Instagram hashtag, musicians who cook nude. And of course, he reveals his last meal. If you're a fan of naturally gorgeous, off-the-beaten-path vacation spots with small-town charm, you're going to want to plan a visit to Washington State's Kitsap Peninsula, where you can grab a scoop of homemade ice cream and stroll around the adorable European seaside village of Paulsbo, or walk on the ferry in Seattle and get off in downtown Bainbridge Island. And May is the perfect month to visit Bremerton or Silverdale, where you can get out of the city and into the forest in just 15 minutes for a beautiful hike. Enjoy a farm-to-table meal at Bremerton's Restaurant Lola, a Black-owned business. I really need to make the trip out there for their Creole brunch. And in the morning, stop by Saboteur Bakery for croissants that are so flaky and buttery, you'll think you're in Paris. There's also a gorgeous golf course in the middle of the forest, and there are several naval museums in Bremerton. Go to visitkitsap.com/yourlastmeal to learn more. That's K-I-T-S-A-P. Or you can find a link in the show notes. Play and stay on the Kitsap Peninsula, the natural side of the Puget Sound. If you like listening to Your Last Meal, you might like watching my new TV show, The Nosh with Rachel Bell. We just wrapped up season one, so there are 4 tasty episodes ready for you to binge at cascadepbs.org. In episode 1, I convince an East Coast skeptic that Seattle now has fantastic bagels. And in the season finale, we go truffle hunting just about an hour outside of Seattle. Episodes are a quick bite. Just 8.5 minutes long. So grab a snack and cozy up with The Nosh. Available anytime, anywhere at cascadepbs.org or find a link in the show notes. I was combing through your Instagram, and you do have a lot of food posts kind of intermittently spread out. And the thing I noticed was you have a hashtag, musicians who cook nude.
Oh, I did?
I didn't see any...
I hate hashtags. No, wait. I hate hashtags. Hashtags, to me, I feel like such an ass when I do a hashtag. Mm-hmm. It just is the thing that I can't quite wrap my head around. I know it's important, so I come up with the most ridiculous...
Okay, well, so you don't cook naked.
Well, I have.
Okay.
I mean, it's happened.
All right.
I mean, who hasn't cooked naked, right?
So do you have to put that on the back of the jar if you're selling the salsa at your shows, like just in case, to put a warning?
If you think it's important, I would consider putting it on the back
so.
Of the jar.
I would say making salsa is probably one of the worst things to make if you're naked, just for the idea. I don't know if you've ever, like, you know,
yes, I already know what you're going to say.
Rubbed yes. your eye.
Yes, your eye. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. When you rub your eye, it's terrible.
Yeah, you got to be real careful with
that. You know, I'll tell you one thing, just to cut to the chase, I wash my hands twice before going to the bathroom.
Oh, before. Oh, before.
Before. Yeah, okay. before.
Another thing Ian posts on Instagram are pictures of his groceries on the conveyor belt at Wajamaya, a huge, wonderful Asian grocery store. And I love that because
me too.
I love seeing what other people are
too.
Putting in their carts. I love seeing what's on their belt because sometimes it's such a mystery. You see these mismatched
love
ingredients
it.
And it's like,
this is
I
like
can
one
tell
of my secret, like not fantasy. Fantasy is such a weird word because when you say it, people automatically assume there's a sexual connotation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I always use it as like the thing that I really think is cool.
Yeah.
I love going into people's houses and opening the refrigerator.
Dude.
Yeah.
Let
dude.
Me touch your hand.
Dude.
This
yeah,
is my
for real.
Favorite
me too.
Thing ever.
Me
yes,
too.
I used to have, it was a very short-lived column for The Stranger where I would go to celebrities' houses and look in their fridges. And it was the most fun voyeurism ever.
How did we
ever.
Not know each other before this?
I
literally
know.
Was going to do a coffee table book called Making Coffee in Strangers' Homes. Because it's like when you're on tour, I'm not like a huge partier, but in my 20s, right, you're hanging out with your friends, you're in a band, they have a straight job, so they they want to go out and so you drink too much. Long story short. I'm just saying I don't do this anymore.
This is how a hangover
works. If you see me
everyone.
This weekend, it's an exception. I'm under a lot of pressure. So you're in it. You're in your friend's home. You have to drive 8 million hours the next morning. They've left and they're like, no, just make coffee in the morning and lock the door on your way out. And then you're going, where the hell are the coffee filters?
Yeah.
And then you finally call them and they're like, oh no, they're above the toilet. And you're like, who puts coffee filters above the toilet?
Yeah.
So making coffee in strangers' home is going to be a book on touring and trying to eat on the road.
Oh, I like this. Have you ever used like someone's pair of underwear as a filter instead or something when you're just really digging around? Clean ones. Clean ones. Because it seems like it would work.
I was going to make a really dirty joke. I'm not going to do that because I don't really know. There could be kids and I get in trouble. My wife gets mad at me. Of course I've done a million things of like, oh, that will support coffee. Who hasn't?
So your book is the combination of my old column and then Jerry Seinfeld's show, getting coffee in cars with
exactly.
comedians. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's I love being at people's homes. One of my favorite things that we were just in Italy. Julie and I had a fantastic time, 3 weeks. And my friend's wife, Italian, says, I'm sick of Italian food. I said, I'm making you migas. And then we ended up going to 20 grocery stores. I ended up buying an African bean. It was crazy.
An African bean?
Like a pinto bean.
It was okay.
I just couldn't find, you're in this place and you're in this, Sicily, one of the best food places in the world. One thing I learned about Italians is they eat Italian food every day all the time.
They really do.
I'm an American. I like to think I'm sophisticated, but honestly, I love the variation of the American diet. I love that you can go and you can have, Nepalese food, and then you can go have, Mexican food and different types. When you're in Italy and you want anything other than Italian food, you're kind of screwed.
Well, that's kind of the thing when you travel abroad and people try to tell you, like, oh, this is what American food, and it's like, we're not a hamburger and hot dog people. Like,
no.
It comes up,
no.
But it is every
I've
food.
Become very defensive about this as American. I'm like, I feel like the rest of the world kind of doesn't realize how cool we are.
There's
we're
no
cool
such thing
food.
As American
We're cool.
We're so cool.
No, because we really do welcome all the different types of food. And honestly, it is true that the best Indian food is in London, but some of the best Indian food is in the northwest of the United States. I mean, there's really good food here.
Yeah.
And the more that you travel, the more you realize we're really lucky.
I like that you make tangents like I do. I'm going to go all the way back around, but I love what just happened. So we're back to the conveyor belt at Awajimaya.
Yes.
And we're seeing all of your rice noodles and stuff. Just going back to your Vietnamese cooking.
Yes.
You started cooking Vietnamese food when you were a teenager?
I was like probably... Well, you know what happened was I think I was allergic to wheat. Nobody was talking about that back then. And I would just be like at my friend's house eating pancakes. And like, I don't feel good. So I started cooking like first Chinese food, which was pretty funny at 12 and 13. Trying to do anything at 12 and 13 is funny. And then I kind of evolved into like Vietnamese and Korean food. And I've kind of stayed in those. Those are still like probably my favorite foods to cook.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to ask you the big question.
Yes,
what
very stressful.
Are you stressed?
Not anymore.
Okay,
I'm over it.
What would your last meal be?
You could have asked me about anything. This was like a really, I literally laid in bed and I couldn't sleep.
Oh, really?
Yes. No, because I get one meal. Can I say a few and then get to the one? Or
yes,
do I only
of course.
Get to, okay,
yeah.
There's no rule.
Take your journey.
Okay. I thought simple because honestly, when I moved up to Washington, one of the ones I thought I love, like a really amazing apple with like freshly ground peanut butter. So like an opal, a great apple. I love that. It's one of
have
my favorite
have you had the Cosmic Crisp yet?
Oh, girl.
It's the best. Have you guys had the Cosmic Crisp? It really is.
Well, good. When you come from other places and you move to Washington, it's like an apple renaissance. When I lived in Texas, I literally stopped eating Red Delicious and I would eat Granny Smith because they weren't just mealy and disgusting.
Yeah.
And then I moved up here and I was like, oh, wow, there's options.
An apple.
So I thought that.
Okay.
And then I thought like Oaxacan mole, which is fantastic.
So from the most simple to the most complicated.
Complex. It takes I make mole. I don't do it anymore because I don't have enough time. It like takes 3 days or something. Can I go into like a slight, a slight rant? I'm tired of food being defined through European eyes. I really think it's unfair to the rest of the world. And I think it's kind of racist at its core because all these food, Indian food, Vietnamese food, all these things have been being made in various forms for hundreds and thousands of years.
Yeah.
And yet we go through the French lens and we define it. And I'm not a professional chef. I eat a lot. I like to eat. I think that it's unfair. I think Vietnamese food is the most sophisticated flavor palette of any food in the world. That's what I think.
I traveled to Vietnam, and I always say that was one of the best cuisines
insane.
I've ever had. I mean, I've had it here, but just traveling and eating it there,
there was no
bad meal.
No, it's insane. So to me, it's like I think about it like the mix of a record. Like when you have a great mix engineer, they get their low end right, they get their mids right, and the top end right. Vietnamese food to me has this sophisticated dimensional flavor palette. Mm-hmm. My favorite food in the world is Bun Thit Yung Cha Giao, which is...
This is your last meal.
Yes,
this is it. It's happening.
This is it. This is my last meal. I just was kind of like, honestly, like it is the best meal in the world to me when it's made right. And that's the vermicelli bowls mm-hmm. with grilled pork and cha gia, which are the Vietnamese egg rolls,
which are
insane. They're so much better than any other kind of egg roll.
Do you like it with just the pork or do you like shrimp in there too?
Well, I like the sugarcane shrimp.
Sugarcane shrimp. Isn't that your porn name too?
No, it's not sugarcane
oh, sorry.
Shrimp. No,
I'm so sorry. It's a children's show, you said?
There's no, but I'm just offended that you used the word shrimp in reference to my porn name.
I don't care about the kids
anymore. I'm
sugar
just trying to defend
prawn?
My... Prawn might be better. I really don't know. You know,
sugar
honestly...
Sugarcane whale.
You're going here.
No, I'm crushing.
I am just a passive observer at this part of the podcast. I'm not really doing anything other than just kind of being here and being graceful.
Yeah, you're just relaxing.
While
I make a fool out of myself.
No, not out of yourself, but if I were to answer that, it would be very bad. So
that's
I'm just
true.
Going.
Okay, so this boon, and you hear it just being called boon in restaurants sometimes. So talk about the components. You have the noodles, which are cold.
The noodles are cold,
yes.
They're kind of a thin rice noodle. We make it at the house all the time, you know, lettuce, chopped up, and then kind of like an herb mixture where you'd use like mint and or cilantro. Sometimes we'll put in Thai basil. So things to give kind of like a minty
herbaceous
bit. The pork is insane. If you guys haven't had it, you marinate it. You make a sugar water thing where you cook it down and it starts to caramelize.
Right.
So then you marinate that with lemongrass and shallots, white pepper. It's just amazing.
So good.
And if you have the time, you cook that over a charcoal fire. Oftentimes, we'll do it over the grill because we just don't have the time. But when you do it over the charcoal, it gives it that kind of burnt thing that's so yummy. Sometimes the deep-fried shallots.
Oh, that's
peanuts,
my favorite.
And then here's the thing. It's the nok cham that does it, right? And when you get a great nok cham, the nok cham is vinegar, fish sauce, Thai chilies, a little bit of garlic, a little bit of sugar, and lime. And it's just
so good.
Fantastic.
When you make the fried shallots, I've learned to save the oil that you cook them in because the oil smells and tastes so good. And then I'll just like saute vegetables in it.
Why do we not have a kitchen? Like I'm starving.
I know. I could talk to you all day, but my body clock is maybe telling me that it's time to move on. Yeah. But before I let you, I want you to talk about Smash a little bit.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about Smash.
So Ian started, he's the president and co-founder of Smash. You can tell him what the acronym is and explain what it is.
Yeah, Seattle Musicians Access to Sustainable Healthcare. Again, I tour out of Austin. Austin has been ahead of this curve. We've had services for musicians, both for healthcare and Black Fret grants and for mental health support in Austin for about 20 years. I brought it up to Seattle thinking that Seattle's so progressive. Of course, we're going to have all this stuff. I was amazed that there were no services. So anyhow, we started it. We provide musicians access to preventative healthcare, dentistry, which is a huge thing because a lot of people that do have coverage don't have dentistry.
Yeah.
Vision, mental health support. We just started the 27 Club to stop overdoses and try to destigmatize having like Narcan and clubs. I've been doing this for a long time. I've lost a lot of really good friends of mine. My old bass player just died a year ago of alcoholism.
I'm so sorry.
For a long time, I wanted to fight the stereotype that it's a hard life because I didn't want to be like, oh, woe is me, woe is us, because it's a fantastic life.
Yeah.
But a lot of people that live this life die young, and a lot of people have health concerns that they don't take care of, and we have to change the culture. And I think there's been a bit of a disconnect in Seattle, especially between the business sector and the creative sector. And so trying to get these people to realize that this town is fantastic for a lot of reasons, one of which is music. And we need to keep the ecosystem healthy.
Yeah. Where can people see you play?
I'm actually going on tour in a week. That's what's funny about my life. I play here once or twice a year in Seattle. I'm literally touring until December.
Nice. Yeah. Well, go see Ian on tour.
Yes.
Look him up. Buy his music. That's how you support
buy my
musicians.
Salsa.
Yeah. Buy his salsa. I want to buy your salsa too. Do you have some here?
No, I actually do have it here, just one jar.
Yeah, just one jar. Yeah. All right, everybody, give it up for Ian Moore.
Thanks so much. Thank you. It's super fun.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. One more time for Ian Moore. We have one more break to take.
But when we come back, actor John Heder talks about his love for tots and what eating was like on the set of Napoleon Dynamite. John Heder, an actor best known for his role as Napoleon Dynamite in the film Napoleon Dynamite. He's also done many other films, including The Benchwarmers, Blades of Glory. He's done a bunch of voice work for animated TV shows. He is also an artist. IMDb says he drew all the drawings in Napoleon Dynamite except the unicorn. Please welcome John Heder. Hello.
Hello. Thanks, guys.
So why didn't you draw the unicorn?
I would have, but they didn't tell me. Like, it was never a like, contract thing. It was just kind of like, I showed up and they had already drawn it. I was like, you guys. And nowadays, that would be in my writer where I would like...
I will draw the unicorn. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And probably get posted on social media, don't work with this guy.
Never again. Yeah, so talk about the film a little bit. It's really interesting to read the behind the scenes that it was really small. You guys all did a lot of parts. Besides acting in the film and drawing all of the pictures, was there anything else that you did that people might not know about?
For those who have seen it, there's boondoggle keychains that the character Deb is giving out to everyone when they're like, you know, the vote for Pedro thing, all these boondoggles. And we had to have a bunch when he's passing them out. And I literally remember from scout camp how to make those. So in between shooting scenes, I'd be in the corner just like,
you and your little
right,
lanyard.
You guys, I got this. And I would teach some of the other crew people how to you know, make some. So yeah, that was my handiwork as well.
Do you know how to make friendship bracelets? Like you have at camp?
It's probably the same kind of, some of the same patterns. Uh-huh. Yeah, I used to do some of those, but only when I had friends, and that was very rare.
So sad. This is a sad show. You have a twin, and also the actor that plays Pedro in the film has a twin.
Both identical.
Both identical twins.
Yes.
I was wondering, when you were a kid, or even as an adult, have you ever taken advantage of doing any pranking?
As a kid, yes. Up until about grade 6, yes, there was. It was easier because we were really identical.
Yeah.
You know, life hadn't hit us in the gut yet. So, you know, everything we did and we sound the same and our teachers were kind of clueless enough that we could get away.
Were you in the same class?
No, we were always in different classes.
Okay.
So, I mean, the most extravagant one that we pulled off was 6th grade and we switched for like an entire day. Different teachers, but his teacher was like totally clued and he knew it. So it was kind of weird. I'm hanging out in his class and all the students are like, we get it. Until my teacher, they're all laughing and she's sitting there with this look of like, you little turkey. And she was a great sport, but I think it gave it away when they had a pop quiz and my brother was not prepared because he had not been studying the same thing.
They probably did it on purpose just to catch you.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of food in Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes.
The opening credits, which is amazing.
Yeah.
The tots, the quesadillas, all of that.
Yeah.
How has this impacted your life post-film? Are people like, here's something from the gentleman down the bar, and they just slide down like a little container of tots for you?
Or sometimes it's milk, and he's like, hey, where was the cow? Can you check it out? Let me know where this cow was.
Yeah.
Tots was going into the movie. Everything really was... As you see, I was like, oh, I relate to this character. I love tots.
Mm-hmm.
But now when I go to a restaurant and like if I'm with either friends or even the people who work there and if they recognize, it's like,
I can't get them.
Give me, no. I'm like, yeah, give me some tots. But you know, and because I'm like, I can't say no to the tots. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're so
really
good.
Yeah. I'm not going to give up certain pleasures, okay?
No, you shouldn't have to.
But the craft services on the film was interesting because we shot it in Preston, Idaho, a real small town.
Yeah.
And they only had like 2 restaurants. And the first restaurant didn't work out. So then we just got catering from this Mexican restaurant. Every meal is exact same. And so you're loving, the experience is amazing.
Yeah.
So you're not really complaining. But you're there, it's just like, all right, let's
start
beans and rice.
Yeah.
And, what am I going to put in the tortilla today? This is my first film, so I don't even know if they had like a craft service table. They must have, but it was probably like chips. That's how
maybe
they paid
craft singles.
All their crew.
They took it totally craft literal.
I would not be surprised if there's craft singles.
The first wedding I went to of someone my age, they got married way earlier than everybody else. I think they were like 21. And oh God, that was the worst food. They had a charcuterie board, but it was craft singles still in the plastic lined up.
It would be complete with craft singles and Slim Jims.
Oh, they should have had Slim Jims.
Yeah,
it was like turkey
meat.
From Safeway. And
it's the dried, they sell it by saying we've got dried meat.
It's like a prosciutto.
Yes.
And you could wrap the craft single. Can I tell you, okay, I'm going to tell you this. This is one of my deepest, darkest food secrets. I don't really buy craft singles as an adult, but if I can get my hands on one, I eat it the exact same way as I did when I was a kid.
Just plain?
Just plain.
Just plain.
I fold it up into pieces and then I swallow it without chewing because I like the way it feels sliding down my throat.
So there's no like pre-saliva lubing before?
No mastication.
Okay.
Well, like, maybe I provide it's like a water slide, you know, like a little bit. Yeah.
It just goes right down. What does that look like when you're like, oh, you know, like.
Yeah, that's it.
Like a bird.
You've seen me do it. Yeah,
all right.
That's exactly what
I mean,
look like.
I remember the love of them when I was a kid as well, but you're just like kind of savoring the corner. You work on the corners first and you
Oh, you started with the corners.
Yeah.
See, everyone has a technique.
Yeah.
Yours is different than mine.
Yeah.
You were in a rom-com, was it last year? Funny Thing About Love.
Yep.
Yeah. And it was centered around Thanksgiving. So I was wondering, does your family have any holiday food traditions that are maybe a little bit out of the norm?
Come Christmas time, my dad, and I don't remember how it started, but it was probably like 15 years ago where our Christmas Eve dinner was, it was a salmon pasta, creamy salmon pasta, and it was delicious. But I don't know what tradition or which country or like why Christmas, but it just got ingrained in us. So like my wife and I picked up the same tradition and like Christmas Eve, we still do it.
I love that. Yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention, John lives in Washington now.
Yay.
We have you now. He's here. He lives in Washington.
That's really why I'm here.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just right down the road.
And I saw you live in, I won't reveal your exact location, but you live in Southwest Washington, which I thought was a great decision because up north in the northwest of Washington, we already have our collection of 90s grunge musicians.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a really good distribution to bring like a little more fame to the bottom of the state.
Oh, I thought you were calling me grunge for a second.
No, you're not.
That's cool.
No.
I'll take it. I still wear a lot of plaid.
You are kind of wearing plaid now, but it's not flannel plaid.
No.
So, yeah.
Well, I left it at home. It's still the summer here, okay?
Okay. Why did you move to Washington?
I grew up in Oregon, and I wanted to be back. I love the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
I was getting sick of the heat in L.A. I wanted to see deers and bears.
Oh,
and,
have you?
Literally, when we went house hunting, the first day looking at the house that we ended up buying, we saw a fox, a coyote. There was, I mean, obviously eagles, you can see them around, but still, like, you don't see it in your backyard
kingdom.
In California.
Yeah.
And it was all in our backyard. And we're like, oh, is that a good sign or not?
Do they come with the house?
Yeah. And then yesterday, someone said they saw a mountain lion just walking down the side street.
In your neighborhood?
Yeah.
You might have been doing this before you lived here, but you're a backpacker.
Yeah.
And I saw that you were dehydrating your own backpacking meals, which is really impressive.
Oh, yeah.
What are some of the meals that you make yourself when you go backpacking?
Yeah, we backpack a lot, me and my brothers and family. And, you know, it was always kind of like the mountain house. It's just the easiest. Just get these pre-made ones. And I was like, no, I'm going to get a dehydrator.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my dad proud because we grew up and my dad was always like hardcore scoutmaster. He'd make the gourmet meals where all the kids were stuck to making Dinty Moore stew and Uncle Ben's Minute Rice, you know? So my favorite sometimes is just grabbing, my wife's a great cook. If I can find some leftovers, then I'll just dry the leftovers.
Oh, that's so interesting.
But it doesn't work very well with Indian food. I'll tell you, anything with a lot of butter does not dehydrate well.
And what does it turn into?
It's still the same.
Oh, like, it doesn't dehydrate.
Not really. Oh. I mean, it's still greasy and you're like sliding it into the bag. You're like, I'll eat this the first night.
Yeah, just in case.
curry, this Thai curry rice, awesome. But 2 years in a row, my kids here, and they'll attest to this, that I was like, okay, we're doing this chicken coconut curry rice. Both times I made it, And then I bring my little, you know, container of the soy sauce.
Yeah.
And I just throw, dump the soy sauce thinking this is just a little bit. And they're like, no, you've ruined it again, Dad.
Oh.
Way too much soy sauce.
God, I was like, don't do that again. Ruined it. Yeah. I'm impressed. I've been wanting to try to make my own backpacking food, but I don't have the dehydrator yet. Despite that, you know, remember like watching the infomercials with Ron Popeil in the 90s? Like, I really wanted one.
They're
then.
Easy. They're great. Mm-hmm. And, you just put it in the corner and just
you
dry
just watch
away.
It dry. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes forever.
So
jerky takes forever.
It does?
Yeah. Most meats. Yeah.
On the infomercial, it took 3 seconds.
No. That might be a freeze dryer or a sci-fi movie.
Or editing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know about that then. You and I have something in common. We both lived in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You lived there 2 years.
Yeah.
I was there for one in Kanazawa. So I was excited to read about your love for Japanese food. So will you explain the curry challenge in Japan? That's something I actually have never heard of before.
So if you go to any curry house where they just specialize in curry and, you know, they have them everywhere, but it's almost like even if it's a different chain, they all provide the curry challenge. It's a food eating challenge. You got to eat 1,300 grams of rice and curry in under 20 minutes, and you get your meal comped. A picture put on their board. And I was like, that would be rad because, you know, I could be one of the only white people or gaijin, as they call it,
yes.
The foreigners up on the board. But it took me 3 times to do it. 3 different trips. The first time I dug in right away, I got the normal spice level, which over there is really spicy.
Okay.
So that was just...
It was too much.
Too much. I was just like, oh, this is burning and everything, so I couldn't do it.
When you said go back, do you mean like you left the country and came back?
No. Like during the time I lived there, it'd be like maybe a couple months in between or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I go like, oh, we got to do the curry challenge again. I'm going to get it this time. Second time, I had like basically this much left. It's like, you know, 3 heaping spoonfuls left and I couldn't...
Who's timing you? Do they stand by the table and it's like tick, 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 tick?
Yeah, other friends I was with, people who were there.
So it was the trust system, like the restaurant doesn't send somebody
well,
over.
Well, they do. They give it to you and I guess they time it. But the funny thing is there was another time I was with a friend of mine who had never done it. And it was before I was leaving. I was like, you got to do the curry challenge. And he was like kind of a bigger guy. I was like, you got this. And he goes and he's eating it. And, you know, he's working on it. I'm coaching him the whole way. We're more like... You could do it. You got a little, add a
he
little
needs
cold
the
water.
Cheese method. Just swallow.
No, it was. It's like you have to kind of add water to it to let it go down quicker.
Like the hot dog challenge.
And he was getting close. I mean, he's probably had about the same amount left. And all of a sudden, not to get too gross, but he's just like, oh no. And he goes, and just a little spit up.
Oh.
A little spit up. But it was technically a little bit of throw up.
Yeah.
And I was like, as soon as that happens, like, you're disqualified. Well, this particular curry house... We're very forgiving.
Oh.
And the people came in, they saw, and they just quickly, very silently,
never happened.
It was like ninjas. It was just like, they cleaned it up. They came back with a plate that looked like it had curry on it, but it had been cleared off so that they could take a picture with him in the empty plate. And I was thinking, rip off. No. I paid the price 3 times to get my picture, and this guy threw up. He failed. And I was ticked. But then the best part is, they gave him like this bag that's like an umbrella bag. It's long and skinny. I don't know why. And they handed it to him because he was looking still a little green.
Is this like if you're going to spew in this
moment? But he had already thrown it. But then he's like, oh, it's okay. I got the picture. He picks up the bag, holds it up to his mouth, and silently, without a sound, just goes and filled the entire bag with... It was still
That's
there at
so
the top.
Gross.
And I was like, well, now you're... I'm trying to rip up this Polaroid, and
the
Polaroids don't
the
rip very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. One more question on that, though. How much is 1,300 grams? Like, what does that look like on
I know,
a plate?
But over there, I was like... I mean, it's a lot. It's like...
Yeah.
It's probably like, I mean, you know...
Oh,
is it 3 pounds?
Pounds?
Thank you. 3 pounds.
Oh.
That's impressive, right?
Yeah, 3 pounds.
Three
is
pounds
a lot.
Of rice, not including the curry.
Oh.
So then they put the curry on top.
Oh,
so it's 1,300 grams of rice, and that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
But by the third time, I was like, lowest level spice level. I've got my cup of water, and then
you should bring an immersion blender, and then just drink it.
All this talk got me thinking. I think they have a pie eating contest at this
festival. Oh, are you going to enter?
Well, I don't know, but I'm like, I did that. My kids are like, you should do it.
I think you should do it, too.
I don't need a spew, okay?
Only if you have a very long, skinny bag.
Yeah, just give me the long bags.
Yeah.
And I'm ready.
I want to choose the shape of my barf bag.
Yes. Do it like a balloon animal. Have
That's
different
what I
shapes
was thinking.
So when you fill it up.
Yes.
When you it looks weird, but when you fill it up, it creates like a pony or something
oh,
like that.
Oh, that would be so cute.
Give it to
kid.
It's heavy. Don't open it. Whatever you do, just keep that
it's
wrapped up
It's a pinata for later.
Oh, hang it up.
Yeah.
It's got all kinds of colors
got
in it.
Got a million-dollar idea right here.
Yeah.
What is your last meal?
What is or what was my last meal?
Oh, what is? What is
my
last
meal? I love Japanese food. I love a lot of different Asian foods. Mm-hmm. But I think I love a good Korean barbecue, and it would probably be Korean short ribs.
Okay.
With a stack of rice with that really good macaroni salad.
Yes.
And just
with all
covered
the banchan.
And everything, banchans, yeah. And everything covered in kimchi. I love kimchi.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
When you say everything covered, do you take the bowl and you just like flip
if
it all
If they
over
have
the
it
table?
As an banchan, I'd be like, just keep that coming.
Yeah.
If I have in my home, I open up the lid and my kids scatter because it just stinks up the whole house.
Food.
They
yeah.
hate it. I'm like, it's mine, you guys.
That's
they
good.
Literally, they see me bring out the giant Costco thing of kimchi. They're like, I'm eating my lunch upstairs.
This is your key to having alone time, though.
I mean, yeah, that's what I do. And so, yeah, I'll pile it on whatever. Any Asian country, I'm putting that kimchi on.
You're putting it on. Is there any other significance to this meal being your last besides that it's just delicious?
It's just delicious.
It's just
but,
good.
You know, it gets me. Yeah, there probably could be more sentimental reasons for other meals, but this one is like...
Make something
it
up.
It makes me rest well. If it's my last meal, I'm like, oh, I'll die happy
yeah.
with this belly full of rice.
Fermented cabbage.
Fermented, yes.
Yeah.
All those,
One of my favorite things that you'd mentioned is that you're a real dad when it comes to eating, because I also, like, now people, they write their pronouns. It's like she, her, he, him. My pronouns are dad/papa, because I'm like you. I like to eat leftovers. And I really like tinned fish, which was something my dad always ate. Like
tinned fish?
Tinned fish, like stinky, like sardines.
Oh.
And oh, you're making a face at me.
Dads
don't shame dads. Come on.
I don't know. I'm not trying to shame. I'm like, I feel like that's a venture that I have yet to explore.
Oh. You got many more dad
years
left. Love it. When I go hiking, I like to bring a little tin of smoked oysters as a part of like cheese and crackers and olives.
I love oysters, but anything in a tin scares me a little bit. But I'm not saying no.
Okay.
But what's the best kind of tin fish you would recommend? Or
I like the oysters best.
Oh, the oysters.
Yeah, but
they're not cooked, right? Or are they?
They are.
Okay.
I think they have to be. Yeah, when they get smoked. But what is your feelings on leftovers?
And I love it. It's like when people say, what do you have for lunch? It's like whatever we had the night before. Because the kids, unfortunately, don't like the leftovers as much. It's good. Like, again, my wife cooks well.
Yeah.
So it's just like, ooh, more of the same. And I just hate wasting. It is that kind of dad vibe. And I'm blessed that I love the leftovers as well because, oh, good, I'm not wasting.
Yeah. Do you have a cutoff, like, at a certain day? Because sometimes if I eat something too many days in a row, I can't ever look at it again.
Ooh. Is this bad if I say no more than a week? If it's less than a week...
You're in.
Maybe give or take, maybe a few days shy, so like 5 days.
Okay.
If it's got meat in it, maybe a little bit less, but I'm pretty forgiving because I don't know if I have an iron stomach, but I never
get... You didn't barf when you ate the curry. I think
no,
you're good.
I never get like, you know, food poisoning or I knock on, you know, I'm...
Oh, that is wood.
Pretty good. That's a hollow wood, so it's a hollow promise it just made me. here we cut to eating the pies. And like, how old are these pies?
Oh, sorry, they're 8 days old. Just
this
over
is
your
pre-COVID.
Head.
Sorry.
What kind of pie do you think is the best for a pie-eating contest?
Probably just quiche, right? The Costco quiche size.
Oh, and the baby quiches,
yes! Yeah, right? those are delicious.
Those are so good.
Yeah.
My memory with those was, I was maybe my freshman or sophomore year of college, and I was talking on the phone with my mom. This was the moment in my life when I realized that food could be passé. I never knew that it could be like, oh, that's not in style anymore to eat that.
Yeah.
My mom was having people over, and she was like, I don't know what to make. And I said, you got to make the Costco baby quiche. Those are so dope. And my mom was like, oh, those are so 80s. I would never. And that
80s?
Was when I learned. Yeah.
No, those were in the 80s.
We were eating them in the 80s. But
a little baby quiche?
The baby ones. Yeah, frozen ones. That's when I learned, like, oh, food goes out of style.
Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm.
Gardetto chips.
Those are... Those are still good.
I grew up on, are they still good?
Okay. I think so.
I ate my limit in high school. I can't do Gardettos anymore.
Oh, so sorry. No Gardettos eating competition for you.
No, but pie.
Does anyone have a question? We could do a quick question, I think. Does anyone have a question for John?
The question was about a much-quoted scene from Napoleon Dynamite. What was Tina the Llama eating when Napoleon went out to feed her? So in this scene, Napoleon is holding a casserole dish, and he is trying to feed the llama with a big serving spoon, but she doesn't want to eat.
So it's that casserole dish, supposed to be like a casserole. But of course, you know, in the film, like in real life, we just had Hamburger Helper without the hamburger and sprinkled it with like breadcrumbs. So it, from afar, it looked like something. In the script, the llama just says, Tina eats the food. But then she wouldn't eat the food. And I'm sitting there like, come on, eat it. That was one of the only lines that was kind of ad-libbed because I was like, just eat it. I was just like, it's not eating the food.
That was improvised.
A little, yeah.
That's
like,
so funny.
It was just like, it wouldn't eat the food. So I couldn't blame. It was hard because I was acting, but I was just like, I'm so sorry. I know you don't want to eat this. Nobody wants to eat this.
And that llama in real life, its name was Dolly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty good name for
Dolly
a llama.
Dolly Llama.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, good laugh, everyone.
Give them a few seconds.
I've never heard so many people laugh like that at the same time.
No, I think I saw a couple boo.
Yeah.
Hey, it wasn't my llama. It was their llama. They,
you know. Yeah. Round of applause for John Eater.
Thank you, guys.
So much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Ian Moore and John Heater's Last Meals. Ian Moore is on tour now. You can find a link in the show notes to see if he's coming to a city near you. You can also find a link to John Heater's Instagram page where you can see his art and everything else that he's up to. Big, huge thanks to Thing Festival for having me. Thanks to festival creator Adam Zaks for inviting me and STG's Amy Gentry for booking the guests. It was such a fun day. I couldn't have asked for better guests. Every single person I interacted with at this festival was warm and lovely and funny, and I'm not even a festival person. I describe Thing as a festival for people who don't love festivals. It's super chill, there's lots of space to move around, there's really good music and art, and just good vibes all around. So next summer, make sure and check out Thing. This episode was produced by me and Laura Scott. Theme music by Prom Queen. To see photos of Ian and John and me doing the live show, go to my Instagram page, Hello Rachel Bell. Maybe this will motivate you. When I texted a few pictures to my mom, she replied, cool, Rachel Bell, you and those cute guys. Peace sign emoji, mermaid emoji. For cute guys, go to Hello Rachel Bell on Instagram. And if you like the show, the best gift that you can give us is to share it with a friend and leave a review. I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal. A live show. 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 Oh my God. A live show.